Committee on General Government. This morning we are looking at the Secretary of State's budget. It's House Bill 5042, Tuesday, March 27th. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill 5042. And do you have any beginning comments before we jump right into where we were, Mr. Hill?
I do not, Mr. Chair, other than, as you remember, there was a package that we had initially skipped over, and I've had numerous conversations. I don't believe that the Secretary of State's office thinks that there is a way to make that position be funded with HABA funds. So at this point in time, it seems like you basically either need to approve the package with general fund, or it probably needs to be denied.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
One thing that seeing the whole lineup here and knowing that John will know the answer to this, Mr. Lindbeck will know the answer to this immediately, how long has the position been vacant? I'm just a little vague on the answer to that question.
6 months.
Come. Whoever has got the wisdom or the knowledge.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. John Lindbeck, Director of Elections, Secretary of State's Office. It's been vacant since August 2006.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, one of the arguments for the position is in a ramp up to the elections and how busy that office is. But if it's been vacant since August, you didn't have it through the last general election cycle. And I guess I'm trying to get some sense of how detrimental it was not to have it. I understand that your office is pretty severely stretched in terms of personnel, and you're being asked to do more all the time. But I'm just, given the co-chair's budget, general fund is such a precious commodity these days. I'm just trying to understand how, if you didn't have it through the last election cycle, it now becomes urgent.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. An excellent question. It was a difficult situation for us. We were having staff that's normally helping people on the phone, doing things like standing at the copy machine, and it just made the job all that much more difficult, which is one of the reasons why we felt it was important to ask for it. Now, can we get along without it? We'll make do if you just don't have the general funder to do it and get along without it. But it does affect our ability to service, you know, provide a level of service that we think is the best for our customers.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Now that the expert is here, tell us why you can't find the elasticity to describe this as a HABA position. Here's the difficulty for some of us. You're sitting on $20 million of HABA money and coming for a position in elections. I understand, at least Ms. Strait explained, that you can't use HABA money to do current work. This has to be prospective new stuff. Given the creative writing opportunities with job descriptions, why can't you beat to fit and paint to match and get this to fit with under the constraints of HABA?
Senator Johnson, believe me, if I could, I would. But I've attended several scary meetings of late about the federal audits in regards to HABA. Just as an example, auditors have been sitting in the state of New Mexico's Secretary of State's office for a month, going through every last expenditure, and each state is expected to go through these audits, and one of the issues they're looking for is whether or not you've backfilled, that you've used HABA funds to fund either positions or projects or whatever that you were doing previously, and that you really weren't using it to fund new stuff. Everything that I'm hearing is that they're being pretty aggressive in these audits. And the downside, if you get stuck with an audit exception like that, is that they ask you to repay the money. And I just don't think for this...
Pay what money? The alleged backfilled money?
Yeah.
So you'd have $100,000 at risk here.
Yeah. exactly. Okay. And if I was able to get creative and think up, you know, three new things for this person to do that we could pay for with HAVA funds, I'd still have to pay for the rest of the duties that were, in essence, old duties pre-HAVA with general fund anyway.
One more follow-up. Yes. We've had quite a bit of discussion here, and I think the panel is generally very supportive of the voters' pamphlet. And you had made reference to the fact that you had some new drafts and some new formatting and some fancy new voter pamphlet stuff. Couldn't this person become a prospective voter pamphlet redesign assistant?
Well, again, yes, they could, but I couldn't, you know, then I wouldn't be using them for what we really need them for. And to the extent that I use them for the clerical duties that this position has done in the past, I would have to pay that out of general funds. We already have a design position as part of our HAVA team. So it's very important, and this has been drilled into us over and over again, that you, as a state, draw bright lines and make a distinction between and make sure that what you're paying for with HAVA is indeed eligible under HAVA. I think it's, I mean, I as the Director of Elections, I'm particularly sensitive to this because my boss, the Secretary, is also the state auditor. Who's in charge of auditing other divisions, and I wouldn't want to do something that would have the state auditor for Oregon the subject of a federal audit exception.
Prudent.
Thank you. I just try to stay out of trouble wherever I can.
I don't know, but in some private sectors, I know that they feel like they're wasting their money. They are not, in terms of the Internal Revenue Service, which can be very probing when they're in their lives, but they feel like they're wasting their money if they're not audited every year. And maybe we should take that kind of an approach with the Secretary of State's, you know. He's still smiling.
So. I'll not answer that question. I'll leave that to a higher pay grade than myself.
I guess I'm wondering if maybe we ought to wait and see how New Mexico comes out and see how scary these audits really are before we just because the dog is barking doesn't mean that it's going to be biting.
Well, we have, Mr. Chair, we have audits that have been completed in other states. I'd be glad to try and secure that information for you if you're interested. I had thorough presentations on this at some of the national meetings I've been attending.
Chair, what's been the result of those discussions?
Well, the result of those discussions, it's made me feel very comfortable that we're spending our money, being very careful is the right thing to do, and that we're spending our money carefully and drawing those bright lines. Because other states have gotten audit exceptions when their lines aren't so bright and they're not handling, for example, the matching money correctly, and we've been very careful here.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Senator Johnson has characterized this as a pool of about $20 million. What is it that you plan to do with that $20 million?
Well, part of it, we have a state elections plan, and we are spending it in a variety of different ways in order to be in compliance. We've gotten rid of punch cards, which was part of HAVA, and helped those counties that were on punch cards transition to something else. We've built a new centralized voter registration system. We need to maintain that system, and so part of that money is to use for maintenance of a very large and very important system to all of us well into the future without having to come back to you, the legislature, and ask for general funds to do that. And so we plotted this out to try and make sure that that doesn't happen for several election cycles into the future. We need to meet the requirements, continue to meet the requirements of voters with disabilities, and so that's an important project that we'll be working on in the next couple of years. Currently, we are getting grants out to counties so that they can purchase new tally systems to replace aging tally systems. And so that money is being spent in a variety of ways to improve the administration of elections. Most of it, by far the majority of it, to meet the requirements that are set out in HAVA that each state must comply with.
Thank you.
Further?
Just a curiosity, Mr. Lundbeck, $21 million is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about maintenance out a couple of cycles, mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the expenses associated with the maintenance of the system. Are they of the magnitude that you could eat up $21 million in a couple of cycles?
Well, I think, they are large. This is a large system. You know, it has data centers in three different places that are for security to replicate the data. Obviously, it's a very important system. When we signed a contract with the company to develop the system, it included development and then 5 years of maintenance in that original contract. And the maintenance costs are about $1 million a year. And we've asked counties to pony up half the money. And so counties are paying into the state elections fund half of that amount, and the state is responsible for the other half. And we're paying the other half out of federal HAVA funds. Now, after 5 years, we will reevaluate that maintenance and decide whether or not we want to continue maintenance at that level. It's possible that it could be reduced, but I don't know.
Maintenance at that level, $1 million a year in maintenance, mm-hmm. What kinds of stuff are they doing?
Well, for one thing, you got to run the data centers. You got to have people watching the system at all times. If something goes wrong, you got to have people available to fix it. We operate a help desk for the counties, and it's an expensive matter. Now, as the counties get more and more familiar, and we get more and more familiar with the system, as I said, after that initial 5 years, and I think we're in year two now, after that initial 5 years, it's possible that we could say, you know, we don't need this level of maintenance, and we're going to spend less. Let's say, you know, just for discussion purposes, $500,000 a year. If that's the decision, and I hope that we can make a decision like that, then that means that that money that's been set aside for future maintenance of the system, that we could draw on it more slowly. I think it was a very wise decision to do this, to, in essence, set aside part of that HAVA money for long-term maintenance of the system. Otherwise, we'd be coming to you and asking you for a general fund for it.
A couple of follow-ups. One of them is... one of your computer contracts, at least you know that this building is so porous and there's anecdotal information floating all over the place. This may be the C&E, so I may be confusing apples and oranges. But a contract that started in the $200,000 range went to the $300,000 range and then shot up to $7 million. Does any of that resonate? Let me come at this differently. How many contracts do you have out right now for maintenance of all of these computer systems?
Well, for the elections one, I think that Gene can probably help me with that. But we have a contract with Sabre for maintenance of OCVR. We also have had a contract with the same company for the development of the OrStar system, and those are the two the two that affect the elections division, and if it goes beyond that, that's beyond my expertise in terms of stuff that may be in place for other divisions.
So Sabre's doing the ORSTAR and the HAVIT work.
Mm-hmm.
What are the magnitude of those contracts?
For the record, Jean Strait, Deputy Secretary of State. For OCVR, it is the maintenance contract. That's all we have with them at the moment for the voter registration system. So that's $825,000 a year,
okay.
And that's maintenance. For the elections business system, it is 1.5 is what that is, and that's for development of that system. It is not for maintenance. They will not maintain it. We will.
Has that contract grown over time?
Yes. We did it as a phased contract. Initially, we brought them in to do the first part of it, to do the module, the campaign finance module, and then we wrote it so that we could amend it and add to it. If they were doing satisfactory work, then we would amend it for the next module, which we have done. They've done the committee registration and they've done the campaign finance so far. Committee registration was $350,000 and campaign finance was $700,000. Those were...
And now it's up to $1.5 million.
Right.
And what kind of money paid for those?
The $700,000 was general fund, and the $350,000 was HAVA funds.
Okay, one last question.
All right, Senator.
How come it was okay first time HAVA, then we switched to GF?
The campaign finance is not allowable under HAVA because it is a state-only function. And so we could not pay for that piece of it out of HAVA, but the committee registration is considered approvable, is okay under HAVA.
And how about the 1.5?
HAVA.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. This $21 million corpus, are you just sitting on that, or is that invested with the state treasurer?
Yeah, Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, that's invested. That's part of HAVA. Is it allowed the states to invest it. We've worked with the state treasurer to try to get the best yield. I think it's about 4.38% is what we're getting right now. And, yes, we're allowed to keep that interest and put it back into the fund.
Is that interest required to go back into the HAVA fund specifically?
Representative Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, yes it is. That's how the federal legislation is written, is that it is required to go back in and to help sustain that fund to keep the work of HAVA going.
To follow up, that would be, in rough figures, around $1 million a year in interest. It is so at that rate... it would be a long time before you would have to come back to this body for more money on that. It would be self-sustaining until most of us in this panel are dead and gone.
Senator Whitsitt, yes, we've projected roughly that we will run out of funds at the end of the 2019 biennium. And that's a rough estimate on our part based on a maintenance contract for this voter registration at the same level. But like John said, we're thinking that can probably go down over time. But to make good to make conservative projections, we've projected 2019. It will get us through that biennium.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one thing, just a little sense of history here. One of the reasons why Oregon still has money and a state like Washington to the north of us is essentially out of HAVA funds is because all of these other states had to buy equipment for their polling places. And they spent tons of money on equipment for polling places, which has affected their ability to finish other requirements of HAVA. Because we're vote by mail and didn't have to get embroiled in that and the ensuing controversies over paper trails and so on, we've had this money that we can set aside for long-term maintenance of centralized voter registration, and I think we're very, very fortunate. And we've been trying to concentrate on that and protect it so that we don't have to come back to you every year and say, here's a giant new general fund expense.
Mr. Chair. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you get into an audit and you're found to be what they consider out of line with that audit, do you have to pay a penalty or you just pay the money back?
Well, it depends on how bad you've been. The U.S. Department of Justice...
That they think you've been, you mean.
Yeah, you know, if California had a problem, for example, where they were like way, way out of line, spending HAVA funds on stuff that was just not anywhere close. And I'd have to look back at the penalty on that, but Justice went into court, and they have to pay all kinds of money back to the feds. And I don't recall, Senator Bates, whether or not there was a penalty on top of that or not. There might have been.
But my point being, Mr. Chair, that if it's just a payback of money, you can be aggressive in using things like HAVA funds, but if you have to pay a penalty on top of that, and it becomes a little more touchy, okay? And I would love to see you be as aggressive as you could about HAVA, and if you have to, you know, it's better to ask forgiveness than ask permission, has always been my attitude, which for me. But if you got penalties involved, it's a little tougher, okay? So that would be a key question for me, and instructing you to be as aggressive as you could about HAVA funds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things. First of all, I think actually the Elections Division should probably be commended for figuring out how to very effectively keep the money so that they could make it work over a longer period of time. And therein, well, I guess our vote-by-mail system has been helpful in that respect, and also has guarded us from some of the pitfalls that other states have fallen into, especially with some of the touchscreen computer systems that, of course, don't have a paper trail, which I could never figure that one out. But so I commend you for that. I want to go back to this position for a second, though. It's been vacant since August of 2006. By my rough calculations here, that's about 7 months. So there's two questions around that. The first one is, are you actively recruiting for that position? And if you're not, have you reported that position to DAS as is required in statute?
I can answer one question, but I'd have to lean on somebody else for the other answer. We're not actively recruiting because we're basically out of money, and I wanted to see what the outcome of this proposal for the package was before we would do that. In terms of reporting to DAS, I'm not sure.
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, we are paying for this out of temporary funds, so we've hired it as a temporary position, and so whatever I don't know what the requirements are to report on temporary positions. I think, you know, so I honestly don't know. I'd have to find out what those requirements are.
Was it initially funded as a temporary or a permanent position?
Representative Krummel, as a temporary. We have temporary funding within our budget, line item in our budget, and that's where this has been funded out of.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
You mentioned that you were out of money. So does that mean that the money that would have been that would have been funding this position has gone to something else?
Honestly, Representative Krummel, I would have to verify that this position was filled. I honestly couldn't tell you that. I'd have to look. I don't know line item by line item what's been spent on what.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Did the person that was in the position leave voluntarily, or were they laid off?
Representative Kremel, actually, they took a vacant position in our front office. She's an administrative office assistant in our front office.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So had the person not taken the vacant position in the front office, then would the person still be in that position?
No.
Yeah, given our money situation, probably not. What's the case with temporary positions is that you employ them if you need them and you have the money to employ them, you employ them. If you don't have the money, then you get along without.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So so when would the, if the person would have stayed in the position beyond August 2006, when would the money have run out?
I don't know. I'd have to look, Representative Kremel.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. While you're looking that up, then you might also let us know what the if the person had not taken that position, how much longer they would have been in that position before you ran out of money. I guess even with temporary positions, I would have to go back and look at the statute, but I believe that even with temporary positions, they're supposed to be reported when they're vacant for a period of time and there's not an active recruitment going on. So that any money that's left over from those positions can be rescheduled or moved to another part of the budget. This is one of the things that is irritating to a lot of us in the legislature is that we give permission, if you will, or authorization for a position, and then the position remains unfilled, and then the money is used for something else. If the money's going to be used for something else, then that's what the line item on it should be. It shouldn't be put under personnel and then utilized for some other purposes. You know, quite frankly, I'm kind of tired of seeing our agencies padding their budgets with personnel that they never have any intention of filling, or that they have an intention of, if the person moves on, of not recruiting and filling the position, and then moving the dollars over to some other purpose.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kremel, this is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. I think there's some confusion here with regards to limited duration positions versus temporary positions. This position was never funded in the budget. It was a temporary position. And from what I understand from the agency, they used resources from elsewhere to fund this temporary position. So as a result, there was no savings as a result of this position not being funded.
We probably tend to sometimes mix the two, limited duration and temporary. And what you're saying is this is strictly a temp, from whatever source that they, whatever they come from.
Yes, that's true.
And never was a part of any budget. Personnel budget item, my question on that, did we get the extra funds from unfilled positions? I'm not sure, but I think maybe that's where Representative Kremel is looking at the kind of tendency throughout state agencies to use unfilled positions to use those funds in more expedient ways while they're recruiting or while they're waiting to fill a position or whatever it is. I'm not sure whether that's where you're going or not, Representative Kremel, but...
Yes, Mr. Chair. It is, and if there's a line item in the budget for temporary positions, and that's how this was funded, then that's fine. But then the other side to that is that that would indicate also, or I would anticipate that there would be enough money to last through the biennium. And if there's not enough money to last through the biennium, then that means that the money was shifted to somewhere else. I mean, from a standpoint of looking at it, you know, personnel and supplies and service and, you know, other sorts of things, I don't have a problem if the money's being used within that same grouping. But it's when it starts spilling over to other things that, to me, is very aggravating, because then we're not getting a real true picture of what it costs to actually run the agency. And I think that in both the personnel as well as the other items that they might be more needing.
Okay, Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Now, this is, I guess we'd call it a teachable conversation for me. Interesting machinations, but. Within the audit division, you have 6 unfilled positions and with a total of about 49 months of unpaid time, and conservatively estimating $5,000 a month for total compensation on those positions, that comes out to about $250,000. So what could you tell us what happened to that money?
We're going to switch directors on you.
That's why he brought the whole department with him this morning.
That's right.
But we haven't had to get to the secretary yet. This is we got a ways to go.
Good morning, Chair Jensen. Good morning. Senator Whitsitt, for the record, Chuck Ebner, Director of the Audit Division. Senator, we make an adjustment somewhere between the 6th and the 7th quarter of the biennium to refund to agencies any unused funds, and that's what happened this time. We just reduced our assessments to agencies by $1 million to refund unused budget, primarily because of the vacant position.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, I share all of your, I think, heartburn with this issue. I didn't think we were through here. I am troubled a little bit by the conservative approach the agency wants to take, I'm especially troubled with it because I think we need to try to be as creative as we can, and we understand that if we fund this position, okay, we're just about funding a entry-level, BA entry-level teacher. We're taking that out of the budget. I mean, because we were talking general funds, and it would just about cover for 2 years an entry-level teacher, including fringe packages at all. And okay, I understand in the whole scheme of things, and I understand looking at a budget the size of the Secretary of State's and looking at a budget the size of the Department of Education, that doesn't seem like a, you know, real big deal. But if we're scratching, you know, very hard on this issue. And if I look at the figures right coming out of LFO, we're going to have a very tough time before this session is over bringing this budget together, as far as the whole state is concerned. And the only way we get there, I believe, is by looking very carefully at every request that especially is going to touch general fund money. So if we seem like, we're being extra, you will appreciate, and one of the members who chairs that other committee has has been very kind and gracious that he hasn't even, got in the discussion yet. So I guess I'm concluding he's willing to give up a teacher, for the Secretary of State's office because of the good work you do.
That's an incorrect conclusion.
That's an incorrect assumption. Okay. Having said that, and looking at the department's position, and I have to believe that I don't necessarily want to, but I have to believe that you did do due diligence to our request when we made that request of you. I know a few offices in the state that are fundamentally more important to the concept of democracy and than the Secretary of State's office. And I therefore, if I could find a member of the committee that would be willing to make a recommendation to approve this package. What number is it?
Package 163, Mr. Chair.
Package
163.
163,
I'm sorry.
163. 163. I would entertain that motion.
Mr. Chair, can I ask LFO a question just real quick?
Certainly.
If this was continued as a temporary position, what would the cost of that be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, it would probably depend. You could make that amount be whatever you wanted. Again, temporary employees tend to be a little cheaper because you don't have to pay all the benefits and those kinds of things. But I don't know exactly what the reduction would be to maintain the same level of services as a temporary employee as it would be as in this position.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Maybe Senator Bates is onto something. If we can figure out how to preserve the position for you as a temp, I would presume that because this is described as just general clerical duties, that this person is not handling sensitive data, you could tolerate having a temp there. I guess what we're asking is really the choices are approve it, deny it, or figure out how to slice the baby in half, and slicing the baby in half might be to continue this as a temporary position. You find some cost savings, and that way you don't lose the position. Because I don't, just based on the conversation, I'm not sure that there's overwhelming support to approve the position. So I'm trying to find out how not to cripple you guys, get the work done cheaper than having a full FTE, and I guess I'm looking for some sense from you guys that continuing it as a temp is maybe the way to go.
That would be fine. I mean, frankly, we felt like it was important to come forward and ask for this as a permanent position because we've been holding it as a temp for 10 years, and that it accurately, would accurately inform you and reflect on our budget. I respect completely the pull and push that you're experiencing with the budget. If it needs to continue to be a temp, that would be fine with us. We'll live with that.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow with a comment. We're about halfway through the session. We've seen half of the budgets. We're getting into the more difficult budgets. And given the co-chair's opining of last Thursday, right now, the scramble for general fund is accelerated to a point where I know that certain sub-chairs, Representative Galizio, for example, is under a pounding to try to hunt for general fund to fix some of the deficiencies in his budget area. We still don't know what's coming. And prudence seems to suggest that instead of letting go of $100,000 worth of general fund here, if you can survive with something short of that, that maybe we try to accommodate everybody. We hang on to some GF. You get authority to go hire a temp. The work gets done. We don't give up GF, and everybody lives happily ever after. And that's kind of the middle ground that I'm trying to hunt for.
Yeah, that's Senator Johnson, that's fine with us. We understand that.
Representative Crummell.
I'm sorry.
I have two questions. One is, I guess, more directed at Senator Johnson, and that is...
I don't have a budget here, sir.
and that is, if this is maintained as a temporary position, where do the dollars come from to fill that? Are they general fund dollars, or are they just dollars that they sort of scrape together within their budget?
I think we have two choices, and I'm inclined to assist them with some amount of GF, but certainly not $100,000.
Okay. My other question, Mr. Chair, is to the department, and that is, if this is funded either way, if it were added as a permanent out of general fund, or if it's maintained as a temporary position, are you going to start an active recruitment right away, or is this something you're going to hold until July of 2008?
Well, Representative Krimmel, it depends on how much money is there and what we'll have to take a look at what period of time is most important for us to have that person on board, and obviously, you know, the most important times are from the primary election in 2008 through the general and after the general. And that would be our top period of time to have that position in place. So it will start recruitment when, depending on when the money, how much money there is and how long it will last.
So if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, then what that indicates to me is that rather than funding this at one full FTE, funding it at, for example, maybe a half of an FTE, since it would only be, or a quarter of an FTE, since the person would only be there for 6 months, 7 months, out of a 2 year cycle.
I'm going to wait on an answer. Go to Senator Johnson.
I think we're confusing stuff again. There's no recruitment. It's, hello, temporary agency, would you send somebody over for 4 days? There is no recruitment. You pick up the phone and you get temporaries from wherever the state gets temporaries. I'm assuming DAS probably has a contract with a temp firm, or I'm assuming that you guys may have your own contract, and this is hire them when you need them, and when you don't, they go away. And so what we're really looking for is some estimation from Mr. Limbach about what times you'd use them, and you'd use them probably prior to the election, during the election, immediately after, and they go away. And so it's there's no recruitment, right?
That's correct, Senator Johnson, and those are prime times, that period before the primary, sort of from that date that you guys all file, which is in March, all the way until, you know, a month after the general or so.
And in the interest of moving ahead, because we're about out of time and we got the whole rest of this budget and we got hung up on this one position, to have some estimate of how many hours Mr. Limbach needs this person, how many weeks that translates into just before the election, during, and immediately after, have him tell us what the rate is that the state contracts for temporary help with, whatever that number is, that's the number. And we move on.
Senator Johnson, and I appreciate your comments. I think we can start off by, if we're going to go the temp route, we can start off by taking the $100,000 and deducting out the, 35%, 40% for, is it 40%?
About 40%. Probably for a
level
this position.
So we're looking, we're starting off looking at, as far as full-time temp position, okay, I mean, we'd be looking at about $60,000. Now, if there's a need, if we can do a little bit better than that and cut a little, another leg off the baby, I think we can get it probably down to... reasonably down to about $50,000. And I would then entertain that motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move package 163 For approval at $50,000 instead of the LFO recommendation of $97,498 general fund.
To be filled through temporary?
To be filled as a temporary employee for those times deemed appropriate by the Secretary and Mr. Lindbeck, proceeding during and immediately following the general election.
Okay. Do you have that motion down?
I guess back then.
Is there discussion on that motion?
There better not be.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chair.
That's intimidation.
I do, no, but I do have a comment. Sorry. I've been quiet, I'll be very as I've listened to it. I have concerns about, and I know we have to look at the budget as a whole, I have concerns about comparing this position with an educator. I mean, I think we have to look at a position as to whether or not this position is an important position in an agency, how important their job is, and not compare it to a teacher because, we're looking at two different things. And I don't want the department to get, as we do this as a temporary position, come back next session, have to explain the budget, and again, explain why this position is temporary and when it's filled and the whole conversation we've just had. So I just I hope we're clear on this. I just think it's probably, if it's been 10 years, I don't know if they've had this conversation in the past or not. I just hate to see it repeated constantly.
Representative Byer, I'm sorry for the comparison to a teacher. We could have picked any one of a number of other things for personnel, and then any one of a number of other general funds. But the bottom line is that it comes out to be personnel someplace.
Right.
I mean, it is general fund money, and general fund money is what pays the bill as far as, you know, most of those positions. And Senator Johnson has escaped me, so do I have any other comments? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered, and the chair will deal with the wrath of the co-chair on this. And so we can move on then to some other places where we're taking consideration of the packages that we have before.
Mr. Chair, the next package is on page 5 of my recommendation. It's for the Archives Division. It's package 121. There are the reclassifications for the Archives Division.
That Gene is going to be the one that's responding to us on these questions. I have some questions on the archiving the fees that we might have on the archive division. This is the cost in here is principally having to do with the county, what data or things are we archiving?
Chair Jensen, the Archives Division, one of these positions is for the Record Center, so that is primarily state records. That is funded through an assessment based on fees. Per box. How many boxes you have, that's how much you pay for.
Okay.
So, and that's the property specialist 1, 2A office specialist 2. That is for the record center. That is funded out of the record center. The editor's assistant, 2, an electronic and publication design specialist. That is funded out of other funds, but that is from administrative rules. So that is fees for the administrative rules.
Okay.
The principal executive manager D down to an operations and policy analyst 3. That is general fund. So that is out of archives administration, and he is funded out of general fund. And then the principal executive manager B to a principal executive manager D is also general funds.
Okay, where are we? Do we have any archiving of county data where counties don't have the facilities themselves to archive that data?
Currently now, we don't. We do have a package in here, which is the local government archives position that we are proposing. Darren has proposed to deny this package and attach it to the legislation because there would be a fee increase that would fund this position, and it would be a fee from the counties to help with counties and their archival needs.
So I can wait for a minute on my concern on this and entertain a motion to move this House Package 141, is it?
141, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would move the LFO recommendation on Package 141.
Senator Johnson moves the LFO recommendation on Package 121. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, the next package is Package 122, also within the Archives Division. This is the package that Gene just mentioned and you were discussing. It recommends that there is a position created within archives to deal with local government archives and records management. LFO recommendation is to deny the request. House Bill 2085 actually has the policy around this and would need to come here to be funded. So I would suggest that we take it out of this, out of the agency's budget at this time and let the legislation have the funding tied to it.
Chair's problem. Yes.
Recognizing that we have done this in several other budgets where there are policy-related bills, this action in no way reflects on the merits of House Bill 2085. It simply is a budgetary function. We take it out if the bill passes, the substantive bill passes, comes back in. So I would move the LFO recommendation to deny the request for the local government archives position reflected in Package 122.
Senator Johnson moves the acceptance of the LFO recommendation on Package 122. Any discussion? Objections? There are none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, next package is Package 123. This is also in the Archives Division. They wanted to do a study on the best location for a data record center archives and do the initial study on this. After a discussion with the agency, the LFO recommendation is to deny the request. The agency has decided that they can find the funds within their existing budget if they want to do this during the next biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would move the LFO recommendation to deny Package 121, the data center storage study.
Senator Johnson moves that we accept the LFO recommendation to deny the request for Package 151. Discussion? Any objections? Sure.
I think it was a different number.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's 123, actually.
I beg your pardon.
Sorry, we just
51 is
did
next.
Away with 151, too.
That's fine.
Sorry about that. Very efficient committee.
Do two at once.
Actually, Mr. Chair, it falls right in line with Package 151. My recommendation is also to deny that request. I would like to say that this is one area where the agency did do a good job of going out and finding a solution to a problem. There was some issues with potentially some security. This is the call center out at the Oregon State Correctional Institute. They are going to work with another agency so that they don't need to hire more people. They're going to both have managers watch over both the call centers so that they don't need more folks. And I would actually give kudos to the agency for finding
this. I think the agency deserves accolades on their creativity in trying to deal with this package, and we really appreciate what they've done.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Johnson.
With accolades, I would move the LFO recommendation to deny Package 151, Business Information Call Center Staff.
For the second time, then, we're denying package 151 per the LFO recommendations, noting for the record that the mistake was it should have been 123 in the previous on the previous vote. So on package 151, any discussion?
Just one clarification, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Are we so? Is this how we sort of pat them on the back as we're kicking them in the pants and taking money from them?
Tough love, you know.
Tough love.
Tough love. Yeah, that's good. Okay.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clarify.
That's okay. No further discussions. Any objections? Hearing and seeing none. So.
Mr. Chair, the next package is package 152. This was a discussion that we had before. Again, this package has a bill tied to it, and as Senator Johnson explained before, the policy package will eventually have to come to Ways and Means, and so my recommendation is to deny the request at this time until the policy bill comes to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation on package 152, awaiting the outcome of House Bill 2090.
Senator Johnson moves the LFO recommendation to deny package 152 while we're waiting for the House Bill 2090 to move through the process. Is there discussion? Objections? Sorry.
Mr. Chair, the next package is package 164. This is the Help America Vote Act funds. This is how the agency is projecting to spend the budget for the next biennium. There's $1 million for accessible voter system, $1.5 million for central count tally systems, $400,000 for public voter education, training, outreach, and campaigns, health and human services funds of $375,000, the computer HTML ballot project for $200,000, toll-free line for $100,000, and continuation of the Oregon Central Voter Registration Project for $2,796,427. It also would convert four of the five positions that are currently limited durations positions into permanent positions with a total cost of personal services of $866,768.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Actually, a question. Gene, you had said earlier when we were discussing the HAVA money and the counties that the counties pay half. How are the counties doing? Are they all participatory given the financial stress that some of them are under? I mean, absent the reauthorization of the Public Law 106, there's a potential that three counties may declare insolvency. Mm-hmm. So are they all fully participatory right now, keeping up their end of the deal?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, at the moment, yes, they all are participatory right now. And we are in discussions with them about whether the federal legislation is going to affect this. And so we are working with the county clerks to talk to them about what that means for the HAVA program. And
one other question, Mr. Chair.
Hold up, please.
In some cases where you used rounded numbers, I understand that the continuation of the Oregon Central Voter System, that's probably based on a contractual amount, and so it's quite precise.
Yes.
In these other cases where you've used rounded numbers, for example, the toll-free number at 100,000, if you don't use all of that limitation, I presume you're just you're not spending the money and it goes back into the HAVA fund.
Correct, Senator Johnson. Yes.
Okay.
That's what that means.
Mr. Chair, I would move package the LFO recommendation to approve package 164, continuation of the Help America Vote Act projects as enumerated in the recommendation.
Senator Johnson moves the approval of LFO recommendation for package 164, the Help America Vote Act continuation project. Representative Crumwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question with regards to these positions. In the material that we have, it says that the HAVA funds will run out in, or at least into in 2013, or that's the guesstimated length of time, which is 6 years from now. In the
In testimony earlier, it was alluded to that we may have enough to last through 2019. So my question, though, is that if we change these four positions from limited duration to permanent positions, when the HAVA money runs out, how will you plan to fund those positions, or are those positions that will be then expended and discontinued?
Representative Krummel, honestly, that will be a discussion that would have to be made. I mean, it would probably, more than likely, if the determination was made that these activities need to continue, this agency would be back in front of you probably asking for general fund to fund those.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
What can we anticipate will be the roll-up costs to these positions? By making them permanent, we're going to have benefits that are being paid. We have salaries that are being paid, and guesstimating that probably people, you know, get improvements in their salaries. We have PERS costs in there, and that sort of thing, because these are PERS employees, even though it's being paid for out of other funds. What would we be looking at in terms of roll-up costs on a biennial basis?
Well, Representative Krummel, actually, limited duration positions are also PERS employees, and they get full benefit packages as well. So we've been paying that on these, and this $866,768 is the biennial roll-up cost of all that. And then the projections that we've given you up to 2019, the estimates that we have here, includes the salary of these people biannualized and increased over time, because people do get merit increases until they're at their top step. So that is included in that estimate.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Do you know how much we funded for these same positions in the last biennium that we're currently in?
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, not off the top of my head, but I can get that information, but it's not right there.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a motion. Any other discussion?
Chair Jensen, just a couple quick questions. One, it appears expenditures comes out to about $6.4 million. Taking into consideration that the corpus is 21 and the interest on it should be about $1 million a year, so there'd be 23, and you take 6 off of it is about. So we're still having, at the end of this biennium, we should have about $17 million in HAVA money, give or take.
Correct.
And the second question is, could you tell me what the Central Voter Registration Project is in 20 words or less?
The Oregon Central Voter Registration is a statewide voter registration. That's what HAVA called for. So it is a voter list, basically. But we then worked with the counties to determine that they didn't need just a voter list. They also needed an election management system. That's what they had currently. So we created a overall system that had the voter list to meet the HAVA requirement, but then also the elections management. So it manages their ballots, and they scan in the voter. When your ballot comes back in, they scan it in. Your signature pops up. Voter cards are scanned in. It's their whole process that they use.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, sorry.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. The next package is package 806. This came from a discussion from Representative Krummel. The Department of Administrative Services and the Secretary of State and the Legislative Fiscal Office sat down and had a discussion. Excuse me. It was determined that by taking the archives building out of the uniform rent, that it would actually save about 8 cents per square foot, or $81,380 for the biennium. There is actually two different fund sources here, but the net savings is $69,173 of general fund and $12,207 of other funds. That would be the recommendation would be to take those reductions.
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation on package 806, the rent reduction at the Archives Building.
Mr. Johnson moves the LFO, accepting the LFO recommendation on package 806, if I got that number correctly. Is there any discussion?
Just glad to see it, Mr. Chair.
There's an accolade for Representative Crummell for bringing the question up. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
That's the end of the packages, Mr. Chair. Would you like to discuss their budget bill next, or would you like to discuss their performance measures?
Let's do the budget bill.
Okay.
Or you had the performance measures in hand.
I have both, so we can, okay. We can do, the next page on my recommendation is actually the budget bill. The budget bill actually has been a little bit of a point of contention between the Secretary of State. In the current biennium, each one of the divisions has a separate appropriation for each one of the fund types. And I had kind of alluded to this during public hearings. But and their request as they came through the governor's budget was to have a single line item for each of the fund types, which was the way it was done before last biennium. My recommendation is somewhere in the middle of that. What I have recommended is that all of the internal functions, the personnel, information systems, and business systems all be lumped in with the executive office, and that elections, archives, and corporation division and Help America Vote Act still have their separate appropriations. We did have a discussion about it. I think that while it's probably not their ideal solution, I think they have finally realized that it's workable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gives some accountability on one hand, yet doesn't tie their hands to the point of where they were in the current biennium. And so that would be my recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation with respect to the appropriation bill amendments.
Mr. Chair, if I might real quickly, we will have to make the requisite $47,498 reduction to the general funds for the elections division and for overall to the agency.
Given the conversation that we had about the position.
Right.
So my motion contemplates all of the math being corrected to reflect the deliberations and judgment of the committee this morning.
Thank you. Senator Johnson moves the acceptance of LFO's recommendations regarding the budget. Discussion? Question? Objection? Hearing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair, my recommendation on the performance measures, actually Senator Johnson had raised some issues during testimony, and I had already raised some issues with the department also on their performance measures. I would like to say that they started kind of later than other folks, and they have made some great strides. But I think that both the Secretary of State's office and the Legislative Fiscal Office think that basically a couple of things need to occur. They need to look at their measures and look at more outcome-based measures rather than output measures. And I think they need to look at their targets. And part of it is they're just starting out, so it's hard to set those targets. But we've had a number of meetings, and Mr. Hibner and I sat down and had a discussion. But we were trying to address some of the issues that were raised by Senator Johnson and mine. So my recommendation is that the agency rework their current key performance measures to make them more outcome-based and make the targets more realistic. I would also recommend that the agency present the performance measures to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee before the next legislative session.
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation with respect to the Secretary of State performance measures.
Senator Johnson moves the LFO recommendation with respect to the key performance measures. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hill, I want to make sure that I understand this correctly. You're suggesting that they... You're recommending that they report to JLAC before the next legislative session. Is that just a one-time report?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, yes, after they have worked with the Legislative Fiscal Office, with budget management, and addressed some of these issues, yes.
I would like to suggest, Mr. Chair, that they not just do one report, but that they keep the Joint Legislative Audits Committee in kind of in sync with what they're doing in terms of their performance measures and how that progress is going, and that there be a progress report in there. The reason is that we want to make sure that they're moving in the direction. And I understand that LFO is our professional staff in this matter, but I think so that the legislature has that little bit of oversight, having them report back, you know, mid-biennium or whatever, and then before the legislative session, so that there's a clearer understanding of where they're actually going with these performance measures. And as a note to the agency and to LFO, I think the underlying question when we're looking at performance measures is always, so what? And that does lead you to the outcomes kind of basis as opposed to the outputs. And so, anyway, but I would make that suggestion, Mr. Chair, just simply because I think it gives for better, more complete legislative oversight.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully suggest that one reporting is ample opportunity for the legislature to weigh in. There's a point where just repeated reporting and going through the mechanism of getting on the agenda and doing the reporting is pretty labor intensive. And my motion contemplated the LFO recommendation, which was one report to the Joint Legislative Committee.
Other Senator Whitson.
Question of LFO. What year were performance measures instituted in the budget process?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I believe it was two biennia ago that they were instituted as part of this process.
Mr. Chair, the professional staff is correct, but I think the intensity of watching performance measures and specifically fine-tuning them to outcomes rather than outputs really took flight last session. And that was where the more aggressive scrutiny of the performance measures as to measuring the agency's efficiency, ability to deliver services, really was narrowed in on.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm troubled somewhat when some agencies are able to write performance measures that are outcome-based and do it on a timely fashion. Others, such as the Department of Education, are not. And this is another agency that appears to me to have had ample opportunity, or at least as much opportunity as other agencies. So it's troubling that some agencies appear to prioritize that function that the legislature has imposed on them more than others.
My point is well taken. Other comments or discussion? You have the motion before you. Is there any objections? Representative Cromwell?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to object to the motion.
No other objections? Let it be noted that Senator Cromwell does, or Senator, I'm sorry for the demotion, Representative Cromwell does object. With that,
just need a motion to move House Bill 5042 to the full committee to pass with the amendments that you folks have made.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would move House Bill 5042 to the full with amendments with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Johnson moves House Bill 5042 to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee with amendments with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? None. So ordered. Escape. Better off than you came in.
Thank you very much.
Depends on your perspective. Depends on your perspective.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.